You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Chicago Executive International Airport has blown up with excitement, and I am not talking about pilot-controlled lighting.
I didn't even know we were international.
Yeah. Or,
I guess so. Yeah, we get a lot of it. We have a customs office here.
Yeah, you better believe it.
You better believe it.
So it's awesome.
Yeah, we are in our new studio. You know, I miss... Do you know what I miss most about the Signature Studio?
The animal crackers?
Well, not the animal crackers. Is the although that's pretty important. But I also miss the proximity of the bathrooms.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I got to walk of like a mile to go to the bathroom here.
Yeah, exactly.
Either that or out the window.
Right. Yeah. Hey, you got to do what they did in the old days when flying airplanes, get the Clorox bleach bottle.
Is that what? Oh, that's where that started from.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you know, do you know what I like about our new studio?
The excitement.
The excitement. We just, you know, here we are in the affectionately called The Ledge for Leading Edge Flying Club. We had a student go out with an instructor. Now we got a young man coming back in just as we're talking here.
A young man. It's awesome.
Well, everyone's young compared to me.
Yeah.
Now, I bet you, because I know that you weren't alone, right? Is it your mother?
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is great.
I was thinking it was somebody else. I don't know.
Wow.
Conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's
that's the way to use an airplane.
There's a... Yeah.
Oh, right. How'd that go? Yeah, he's got a smile on his face.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, a mission accomplished.
So, if those of you, here's a perfect tweet for our audience. Have you ever used an airplane to go on a date?
Well,
that's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. But, okay, yeah. Oh, you know what? I forgot to tweet out today.
Oh, no.
No one's listening because if I don't tweet, they don't listen.
Yes.
We got to give me something to retweet. So,
yeah.
Well, you know, everyone's gone out on a date, I think. But the question is, how many people have used the airplane to get a date?
Yeah. You know what? The first time, so I had a roommate in college that did that. And he ended up having a, you know what? Let me back up. So he,
you're backing up.
Here's my thinking on airplanes and dates and stuff like that. And that's, you know, the date is, it's a special thing. I mean, let's be honest, flying for a date is pretty expensive, right?
Oh, my God.
So to blow that is like the first date and then, like, you know, have it not work out might not be great. Well, it's not great at all, other than the fact that you went flying.
Yeah, so that's great.
Yeah, exactly.
And you never know. It may work out. I mean, let's face it. You're not going to – how do I say this without sounding like a pig? I guess I can. I'll just go ahead and sound like a pig.
That's fine.
You would not – do it unless you are pretty excited about, like, this date isn't going to happen without the airplane.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I guess you're right about that.
Yeah.
Why not? But I had a college roommate, and he took his now wife on a first date. They went flying. They rented the airplane. I had to check him out in the rental airplane. And it was funny because, you know, I'm like, so he comes back at night. And I said, hey, how'd your date go? He's like, oh, it was awesome. You know, we did slow flight, stalls, and steep turns. And I'm just like, you got to be kidding me. You know, like,
what kind of date is that?
Yeah. I'm like,
yeah, I showed her what my lesson was like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's not what you do in that place.
Stalls, steep turns, slow flight. And then he's like, yeah, and then we did, you know, then we did a traffic pattern, and we came in and landed.
I guess showing our skill set there at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, yeah, you want dinner show? No, let's go out and do slow flight in a stall.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly. Oh, that's interesting.
Right. but, no, I think it's pretty hilarious. So, with that, I don't know. Have you ever used an airplane to go on a date?
Of course.
That's awesome.
Just ask my wife. Actually, so... When you say date, actually, now you've got me thinking, because my wife and I, even when we were boyfriend, girlfriend, all those many years ago, we'd go in an airplane to go home or things. They weren't dates. We rented a car to go on a date once in college. But the one time, and maybe it was just recently after all these years, is we went up to go to lunch in downtown Madison, Wisconsin.
Nice.
And we probably talked about it at that time. It's an accomplishment for my wife because... She likes to go see family. She doesn't want just she and I go out on a date. But she did, and she enjoyed it. Actually, we've done it twice. Once downtown Madison, and once the cafe in Madison Airport.
Nice. That's awesome.
Awesome.
I love it. Yeah, that's a great use for an airplane. Is you know, there's a lot of utility in them, including a love tool.
The LT.
Did you ever see that? I think there was a Cherokee 6 in the Atlanta area being rented. I think it was like milehighclub.com.
Oh my God! What a great idea!
Yeah, and they would give you you and your lover would hop in the back of the Cherokee 6 and join the Mile High Club behind a curtain, and they would throw something in the back of the airplane and all that and everything.
Yeah,
and,
now that's something I'd like to be second in command for.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
With my iPhone. Don't mind the man behind the curtain there. It's just our second in command. Make sure the flight remains safe.
Yeah, exactly.
And he has more material.
Right. Awesome. I love it. I don't know how we start straight down this path. We're kind of doing pilotage or dead reckoning, and we took a wrong course, but I like it.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's perfect. By the way, we have been talking, 8 minutes now or something like that?
Yeah.
Who are you, and who am I?
You are Bob Schmelzer.
Survey says. Oh, come on, we haven't done it. Bye, Mark.
Bob. You're Mark Eppner.
I am Mark Eppner, and you're Al Waterloo.
That's right, thank
H2O
you.
H2O-loo!
Loo, 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 loo. You know, that was good.
I like how we just kind of start talking, and everyone says, wait a minute, did we come in the middle of a conversation?
Yeah,
or
who are these guys? Like, yeah. Oh, we're on the air.
We're on the air, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Good thing that we have our mics on 24/7.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there was I think there was one time where I was messing around with the radio station. Remember when we were back on athonalive.com?
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
And so I started messing around with it, and for some reason, I don't know what happened, but I took control, and I was like sitting there broadcasting live from the radio, you know, the broadcasting live on the radio station, fanalive.com, for like 2 or 3 hours. And I was just like, oh man, stuck mic. Yeah. So I don't know. It was good, but hey, it was a beautiful weekend to fly, wasn't it?
It was a beautiful week to fly, and I was very frustrated because every day I came out here, every day I wanted to come out here, calm, sunny, clear, not as cloud in the sky. You know, for a VFR flight, you couldn't get ass better, couldn't get away from work. And then finally on Thursday night, I came out here, and there was one airplane here. I said, I'm going up. And there was some issues with the plane that didn't pass my confidence level.
Yeah.
So Friday, gosh, did I go up Friday? I don't think I flew till Saturday. It was very frustrating. And I only got 0.7 in on Saturday, so...
Wow.
I feel like lost opportunity, I guess.
Oh, it was a beautiful weekend.
Oh, my God. And it is still beautiful.
Look at it outside.
It's God's country. What can I say?
Yeah, exactly. You know what? here's something that happened to me for the very first time in my aviation career. I was coming back yesterday from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and the gentleman that I was with, we were flying up the lakefront. We started listening to the ATIS. And did you hear about this?
I did not. Go for it.
On the ATIS, it said, Chicago Executive Airport, time 0015 Zulu. Chicago Executive Tower is 0ATC from 0015 Zulu to 0045 Zulu. And I was like, what? And
was that just like kept, bathroom break
I kept blue. I don't know what it was. It was a, I'm like, what is that? ATC zero. I was trying to find a definition of what that meant or what it was or anything like that. And it was, so I Googled it. What is ATC zero? And it was a, it's slang for the tower's closed.
I figured that, but you're saying the ATIS said it was closed for half an hour.
Yeah.
So that's either the guy's got the flu and he's really got to go to the bathroom or something else. I imagine it's something else. What was going on during that half hour?
I think they said it was a staffing issue.
Someone didn't show and
somebody didn't show and they have mandatory breaks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, they just didn't, you know, it was funny because we showed up while the tower was closed and then we were on a left downwind for runway 16 and the tower reopened. And the guy's like, how confusing was that, everyone? And we're like, very. He's like, oh, that's the first time we ever had to do that.
I've never heard of that before. So the question is, you were on left base after you've announced you're coming in under pilot controlled stuff. So do you now, with the tower open, have to get clearance to land?
Yeah.
So if you guys all lined up, they could say, starting all over.
Go over. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Go around.
But they accepted everything, right?
Oh, yeah. They accepted everything. And it was a little – I thought it was pretty dangerous. One, to say ATC zero, which I later found out was a slang term.
Yeah, that's not good.
No. Sorry. And to hear it was like, what does that mean? They didn't coordinate this with Chicago Approach. They're like, well, you know, we heard the tower is closed. We're not sure what's going on. And then they're like, the only thing that's said in the ATC zero for, contact Chicago Approach on the ground 124.7 and in the air 120.55.
To, close your flight plans, you mean?
I guess. I don't know. It was strange because, you know, and the tower didn't seem to really know what was up either.
You mean center or approach?
The approach controller.
So you were on an instrument flight plan.
No, we were VFR.
Oh, okay.
And then we ended up flying, and the guy, you know, we asked the approach controller, said, hey, is the airport open? He's like, no, we don't even really know.
Wow.
So there was no, like, procedure, like, you know, at after hours, they used to say, the common traffic advisory frequency is blah, blah, blah. Nothing like that.
That's not good.
No, and we were trying, you know, so it ended up, people weren't announcing. They were just doing touch and go. It was like the Wild West.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's fine if you're expecting it, but there's people that know the hours of operation. They've checked their pre-flights and the briefing, and they get here. And certainly we are all adults and know how to react, but there's a lot of airplanes. This is like the third busiest airport in the state.
Yeah.
Behind O'Hare and Midway, and that could be.
Yeah, it was pretty strange.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of want to investigate it a little bit more and all that. So
you should.
Yeah, I think I will. So
I will.
Hello, Monday morning, business hours, little phone call.
So yeah, that was disturbing. You know what else was disturbing?
What's that?
You know, I'd like to play a little clip from AOPA Live this week.
Sure.
All right. So AOPA.
You love clips.
What? You love clips?
Yeah.
Love clips.
Love
That's
clips.
Like clip art, only love clips.
Wow.
Anyway. So. There was, AOPA has been down this thing about customs doing the search and all of that. And matter of fact, when you were alone on the show a few weeks ago,
yeah,
you talked a lot about it. Unlike you, I listen to the show when I'm not on it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's a joke.
Okay? Yeah.
Yeah. Don't be doing that. So, I listened. I thought it was a great show. You know, you're talking about that. And what do we do? You know, here you had a letter from someone that was basically saying don't, you don't have to not succumb to it, but you know, there was some certain rules, and you can demand
rights. Yeah, you have rights in situations
so
like that.
So AOPA, on the behalf of some members that had search and seizure type things, got permission from those people, signed documents, to say, can you do a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, search on documents, and let us know what was going on. And this is what they reported in this last week's, last Friday's AOPA Live.
AOPA filed multiple Freedom of Information requests with Customs and Border Protection to find out more about their stops and searches of our pilot members. And we have the signed forms from the members to act on their behalf.
It's essentially a kick-off letter from a law enforcement agency that says we're police, we're law enforcement, the stuff you ask for is law enforcement sensitive, and besides, not to worry because we're there to watch out for the civil rights of your members. That's an unsatisfactory response, and we're going to appeal it, but we're not going to play games with these people.
Ken Mead is the former Inspector General for the Department of Transportation. He knows the insides and dark corners of Washington bureaucracies, and he says we shouldn't just trust law enforcement agencies to do the right thing.
That's not how our government is set up. People get stopped by armed law enforcement agents, searched, and they're totally innocent. I take a look at my law books, my law school training, and I say there's got to be a reason for this. And when there's no reason given, I get concerned. I get alarmed. And
so, yeah. I mean, listen to that. That this is concerning. I'm normally kind of aloof in a sense with a lot of things. Yeah, people are doing the search. I don't want it to happen to me, but if they have probable cause. But I'm listening to this, and that last guy was executive vice president of and general counsel for AOPA. I mean, he's concerned that this is not right, that they can't do what they've been doing, and then they basically tell us, as he said, to kiss off when we ask about it. That's just wrong, and it has me greatly concerned.
Yeah, it's rather strange, and, you know, there's, it seems like that this isn't just a theme in aviation. There's been some kind of viral, you know, and pardon me for the informalness of this, but like YouTube videos of people challenging searches and things like that. And not just in airplanes, but in cars and things like that. And it's weird. There's just this weird vibe that goes along with these. And it is unsettling. You know, if an airplane, if you just finished a flight and you get surrounded by law enforcement to just get out of your airplane and do whatever you need, you know, do whatever they need to do. And who knows what that is. You know, that's going to be pretty unsettling. I mean, that's a lot of emotional damage.
Well, and I'm sitting here after listening to your show where you were talking about the response the one gentleman recommended, which is basically not to comply, is what I heard.
Yeah.
And yet I've read other things, be respectful, do what they say. I don't know how I'd respond. I don't know what the right response is, but I certainly wouldn't want to, you know, get on the ground when I've done nothing and I'm flying an airplane that's properly registered, you know, all those things. What's going on in this world when they're able to do stuff like that?
Right, exactly. I think the pressure should still be applied to all this. You know, I certainly don't want any civil aviation liberties to be taken away or taken because of, you know, that. I think that, you know, you'd find a lot of pilots they're not the issue, right? So I wonder why.
Yeah, John and Martha King, right?
Yeah.
When they had that happen to them.
Exactly. And I don't know. It's rather scary, and I hope it doesn't happen to me, but, you know.
What would you do?
Well, in my little response in that episode, I was saying, you know what, be a pilot in command about it.
Right.
You know, and you have decisions to make. You're still in command of the airplane, whether it's on the ground or in the air, right? You still have a responsibility to passengers and whatnot. That's kind of my feeling, and say, hey, you know, I would definitely challenge it.
And how, kind of take me through if, you know, if you're okay doing that.
I don't know how it would go about it, but be like, you know, if they're pointing guns at me, then I probably would get on the ground, but then I'd be like, you know, why I don't consent to a search, you know, just say I don't consent to a search. You know, what's going on? Why are you doing this? This isn't, you know, we didn't do anything wrong. and try to, you know, just keep challenging that and say, hey, you know, educate them that I'm educated on my rights.
Yeah. Well, and I don't want to be a jerk about it. I do not consent, but at the same time, I like what you said. I'm still pilot in command. I am accountable and responsible for the safe operation of this plane and those that touch it. I do not consent to you having any access to this airplane when you're not responsible and accountable for the safe movement of this airplane. I am, and you do not have that right. And you could hurt yourself or you could hurt others.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, another thing I just thought of is that, you know, if you see these people waiting for you, you could have the tower call police for you.
Unless it's the police that's right there waiting for you.
Yeah. Just tell them to call, you know, tell them to get, you know.
Yeah, but if you're in Iowa City, there is no tower, or, you know, there's.
Yeah, true. You know, if, depending on where you're at, you could have them, you could have the declare an emergency. I don't know. Get the FAA involved. I don't know. That there's really no right or wrong answer. You know, other than be a pilot in command about it, because even if the plane's on the ground and, you know, you're still occupying it, you're still in command.
Absolutely.
And responsible for everything that's in it, you know. And especially if it's not yours.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm responsible and accountable. I'm not going to abdicate that responsibility, give it to somebody just because you have a gun and say you're police. You don't, are you a pilot? Do you know what you're doing in around an airplane?
Yeah, right.
Right? You know, you could chop someone's hand off of the propeller or, I don't know. Yeah, anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I like the idea of being, I'm PIC, you're not, you do have no authority to take this airplane from me.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
I'm responsible for it, not you.
Yeah, right. You know, if,
which reminds me of a Sunday Night Shuffle, by the way.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. What time? Oh, my goodness. Look how late it is. Do we have a quick second?
Yeah, we always have a quick second.
So, you know, let's go along with this thinking of guns or whatever. These guys are out on this hunting trip, these Joe and Steve.
Yeah.
And it's camping and hunting, whatever, the whole thing. And, you know, they're out there, and all of a sudden, Joe, kind of the eyes roll up under his eyelids, and the eyes close, and he's down on the ground motionless.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so and this is a real problem. So Steve just doesn't know what to do, and he knows he's within cell coverage, so he dials 911.
Good man.
Yeah, and the woman answers the phone, what's going on? He says, I'm out here in the countryside, and I think my friend that I'm with is dead. What do I do? And so she says, well, I need you to go check and confirm that he's dead.
Whoa.
So he puts down the phone, and all of a sudden she hears a big gunshot. Boom. And then he comes back. He said, okay, he's dead. Now what?
Oh, God. Wow.
Oh, no, I don't have my sound effects. Let me do it this way.
Wah, 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 wow! Wah, wah. Wow! Yeah. That would be almost like a repeat of the national new court trial that's been going on lately.
Zimmerman?
Yeah, but we'll save that for another.
We'll save that for another one. Although we're talking about news, we can't go too far. And I know we need to get on to our guests, but we can't go too far without talking about the news gaffe with the pilot names and the Asiana.
You know what? I didn't get it at first.
Well, obviously you're just like the anchor because either did she.
Yeah. I was just like, I'm like, oh. And then I listened to it again. I'm like, oh.
Well, there's a game we used to play. And I don't know, Balderdash or something like that. But you would have sequence of letters and you'd read it and it would be word. And you had it. What was the phrase or the word?
Right.
But just to see it up there on the screen, and this was very sad, and it didn't have to happen, and three people died, you know, all of that. But I have to admit, and a lot of people I know saw this and heard this, and for them to say Captain Something Wong, We Too Low,
oh,
Holy Fook, and Ding Bang Ow, I mean, it made us laugh. Inappropriately, maybe, but my son's in the news business, and he hadn't heard of it. I just told him today, and he said, no, that NTSB wouldn't have sent out that, even if it was an intern. Someone was pranking somebody or someone was trying to get somebody in trouble. And so I'm interested to find out what actually happened, but it was,
we should have an NTSB investigation on the NTSB investigation.
Ooh, it's kind of like looking into a mirror and a mirror.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But so there's a lot that's come out of that, Asiana. Let's forget about the news error. But it still boggles my mind. And I've been reading some things about how pilots for not only Asiana, but KAL have been trained. And maybe that's just one of those documents that's gone viral, about American that have been brought over to do training and some of the things they're forced to do to pass pilots. It bothers me.
Right.
You know, if they can't shoot crosswind landings, they can't shoot visual approaches, they need the autopilot and auto land on. It's just wrong.
Yeah, right. I just hope that the integrity of all the training has been upheld and
consistent across the globe and across all the airlines. That's
right.
All we ask.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel very comfortable when I, you know, United or an American, so I can't always say I love all the service I receive, but I trust the pilots, because the pilots I know are extremely competent.
Right.
And everything from the systems, when does auto land or when do the auto throttles work and when they don't.
Right.
As well as just stick and rudder skills.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, speaking about somebody that is pretty competent is, our guest tonight.
And that is?
Mr. Drew Archer, all the way from Trenton, New Jersey. And, Drew is a friend of yours and mine, and you know it's really cool that he got his license not too long ago, and you know he's just hitting the ground running, and I absolutely love it hearing stories. I call that, you know, that's like a private pilot success story,
a PPSS.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right. let's yeah. Forego the acronym on that one.
PPSS.
Yeah, exactly. Well, why don't we get him on the line, because this is going to be I'm really excited to talk to him. He's got some cool stuff to share, and I'm fascinated.
This is the first time we've talked to him on the radio. We have had a conversation with him. He's a friend of the show, and we've had an opportunity to talk to him over the years, so this would be good to get him on the show and hear what's going on in his life.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Drew, this is Alan Mark. I hope that's you out there.
It is. How are you doing, guys?
Awesome.
As Al would say, awesome.
Yeah. what? There's nothing. No other way to be than awesome.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's a good attitude to have.
Yeah.
So, Drew, you know, there you're out in Trenton, New Jersey. Actually, I first became aware of you when Al, I don't know if he sent along an email that you provided or just a conversation you guys had, that we were the reason why you did not have road rage on Mondays. Is that true?
Oh, that's absolutely the truth. I'm one of the many folks here in New Jersey that commutes up to the New York area every day, and on a good day that can be done in about an hour and a half. You guys provide a lot of relief during a long week. My only wish was is that you guys did a couple of shows during the week, so I didn't have to wait.
That's right. Well, the good news is now tomorrow morning when you go to work, you'll be listening. Well, actually, if you get it posted, you'll be listening to Al. Otherwise, you'll have to wait till, I mean, you'll be listening to yourself.
And, oh, there you go.
Yeah, hopefully Al will get it up on the site here and out on iTunes early in the week, because we wouldn't want any road rage.
No, we don't.
Absolutely not.
That's right. That's right. So what's been going on in your life? Obviously, Al was talking a little bit about you. You're a private pilot. When did you get your license?
I received my certificate just around the first week in November. It was originally scheduled for the end of October. And as everybody knows, Hurricane Sandy came to visit. So that kind of threw us for a loop, which no pun intended, as you guys can probably remember, and a lot of folks can relate to, you have that anxiety buildup going into the check ride.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that was bad enough. And then, of course, then we had concerns about making sure family and whatnot was all taken care of. And then, obviously, for very good reasons, it had to be put off for a couple days. But we spent 14 days with no electricity, so it gave me plenty of time. Actually, I've got some pictures of my son and I with my Glime books brushing up with a camping lantern the couple days following it leading up to it. It was pretty interesting pictures that I've got of that.
See, I have to use the CDs and the videotapes and all of that. And, I'm thinking in a Sandy type situation, I wouldn't be able to watch it. You had the Gline book. So you, as long as you had a candle, you could continue studying. Good for you.
Absolutely.
Talk about a great reason to have a power outage.
Yeah, right.
To get all the study, 2 weeks of studying for
your oral.
Of course,
we remember what happened. Was it in 68? When was the New York power failure?
They had one back in the early 80s, I think, didn't they?
When the babies were all born.
Yeah, they had one in the 70s, and then I think again they got hit in the 80s again with the, which wasn't as severe. But yeah, that was a big one too. I only wish the power had been out when I was studying for my written, because that would have helped me be a little more focused, because that took a while.
Well, no, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. I mean, if it's either baby boom or private pilot's license or whatever.
Yeah.
There's some positive benefit either way you go.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. So on your, now that you've had your license, Drew, for a couple months, I gotta say that I'm thoroughly impressed with, your enthusiasm for aviation and, you know, what you've been actually going out and doing. You've really hit the ball or hit the ground running and all that. And just recently, I know you and I off there had exchanged some, notes about a trip that you just recently took for business. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Up until a couple of weeks ago, it had been pretty much all local flights. I mean, frankly, where Trenton is situated, it's right on the Delaware River. So I hadn't really had much of a chance to branch past the southern tip of New Jersey or out towards the middle of Pennsylvania. So I'd put everything together and I had to make a business trip out to Akron, Ohio. And I made a decision that having driven it several years in the past, that this year we were going to do things a little differently. So I got things together and 70 pounds of cargo, because it was a trade show I was going to with business that I'm in. And I took a crash course in learning how to use the rear seatbelts in a 172.
We don't like to say crash course, though.
Yeah, that's true too. I taught myself how to tie some things down with the seatbelts, and that was a pretty interesting lesson. And we went for it. We jumped at Trenton, in a 172, and I made a 3-hour 20-minute flight to, Akron, Ohio. And landed out there and had a good experience with it. I was fortunate enough to pick a day. It was I left myself 2 days before I had to be there. So what they say about that. The weather was severe clear going out, and had no issues with that. There was a couple lessons that I learned, because I think after you get your pilot's license, you know, when you're going through your primary training, things are structured. You know what to expect when you get there. And after you get that, you're kind of in limbo because there's nobody there to hold your hand anymore per se. You've achieved what you were working for, and now you can actually go places. So it's a great, fantastic, wonderful feeling, but at the same time, to be very blunt, for me at least, it was very intimidating. I had, where we're situated, I've had plenty of experience in the Pennsylvania, New Jersey area to fly under just about every airspace there is, Bravos and Charlies and whatnot, so I was comfortable with that. But one of the biggest mistakes I made, believe it or not, as silly as it sounds, is I went shopping prior to that. Went online and I ordered to make sure I had my sectionals and those tools. But I also bought myself a new flight bag along with some other things. And I really, really learned about resource management in the cockpit. You know, that's something they drill into you during the primary training. But when you're doing when I was doing for my first cross country like that, or what I called my first big boy ride, you know, that wasn't the time for me to be fumbling around trying to find a sharp pencil in a brand new flight bag, because there was a lot more, you know, cool pockets and whatnot. But it actually made things a little more difficult for me.
Interesting.
So it was, you know, the other thing that I'd done is I'd sworn it off, even though my, you know, I pretty much know Al's feelings on this subject, and my CFI was very supportive of it, but I swore off the iPad until I got my certificate done and over with, because I knew what I was in for with thought, but not navigation. So it was, for flight for a while now, but that was really my first real test with it. When I'm not flying in the air, I'm an armchair aviator, as I like to call it, which is what I was for a lot of years, and you can actually interface, as you guys probably know, for flight to, Flight Simulator 10, which was really good to get a basic feel for it. But I had, my backup sectionals, and I had all those pieces that I would need, just as a failsafe. But for flight was a little tricky for me. Like I said, I planned it out. I had my pink line there, and that was all good, but, I had a difficult time, picking out, you know, things like restricted areas and whatnot when I got out away from areas that I was used to being in. You know, that was tricky to keep an eye on, but it was great for elevations, you know, to fly ahead of the plane, to know what was up ahead of you. It was good for that, but it was, it really presented a challenge, to be new to ForeFlight like that. You know, I was smart enough not to depend on it, but I wanted to put it to better use than I was really able to. So it was tricky in that respect. One of the other things that really got my attention is, like I said, I'm accustomed to, different airspaces, but the Akron airport that I landed at sits under a Class C, and I wasn't really clear on procedures getting out there. And I tried to make some phone calls the morning before I left, which was rather early, and I couldn't get a hold of anybody. So I kind of just, you know, had to go on, you know, I figured if I was talking to the controllers out there, if I did something wrong or were about to do something wrong, they were going to be pretty quick to let me know about it. So it was really my first time, like I said, dealing with a Class C airspace, talking to the controller there, going into a pilot controlled field, as they like us to refer to them now here. They're not uncontrolled, they're pilot controlled.
Exactly. Or non-towered.
Exactly.
I yell at people like Al when they say uncontrolled, even though I was brought up the same, hey, there's controlled and uncontrolled, but.
Sure.
Got to send the right message out to the general public.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, fatigue wasn't really an issue. I did make special notes. There's a lot of ridges, which I know Al's familiar with the flying he does out in this direction. You know, out by Harrisburg and whatnot. So I kind of made an extra mental note of altitudes that I would have. Obviously, I went out VFR. The whole way, so I knew what to expect for coming home, not knowing what that was going to be like yet, and I'm glad I did. So we got into to Akron. You know, fatigue really wasn't a problem for me because I was too excited. But after the second going into the third hour, I started to get a little bored. So I actually need to do some research on how to incorporate the MP3s or something like that into my flying. Because it was neat. I was, busy with the airplane, but, you know how it is. After you're on a long stretch for a little while, it gets a little quiet in there.
But how many hours did you have at that point?
At that point, before I made that trip, I was sitting, just under 74 hours.
Yeah. So, gosh, I would think that for being so new to it and, like you say, such a significant trip, I would have not gotten bored. Matter of fact, I still don't. I still do the thing every now and then. Okay, what am I going to do if the engine fails? That kind of stuff. You know, and I play that game, and on the long trips, even more so.
Absolutely, and that's one of the things that I have to point out compared to being, you know, Pennsylvania is not so bad, but the further west you go, and I noticed this because the weekend before I made this trip, I actually had to drive out to Michigan for a wedding. And it almost follows a similar route out there, So I was kind of watching the Allegheny Mountains and whatnot and kind of what the weather was doing, you know, up and how things kind of reacted out there. But, I did notice the further west you go, the flatter the land gets, and there's a lot of places to go for those engine outs. So that actually gave me a little, it's funny you mention that, because that gave me a little extra layer of comfort, because there was plenty of places to put down if that, you know, you needed to. But yeah, I do the same thing, Mark. My CFI was constantly drilling that into my head.
Okay, and I don't want to burst your bubble, but a lot of those farmer fields here in the Midwest, they look flat until you get closer and then you think, oh my goodness, they aren't flat.
Sure. Well, yeah. They look a lot better until you get up around over here, up around Teterboro and whatnot. Your options are a lot more limited. So.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So Drew, from a good pilot is always learning. What was one thing that really surprised you about this trip that you might do differently rather than just not catch yourself on something, you know, trivial, but what was something that you truly, you know, felt surprised about on this trip?
One of the biggest things, and I have to admit, and I'm happy to do it, even though, you know, it's kind of a no-no, but I did not feel comfortable, picking up flight following until I got out, about the midway, which was probably around Harrisburg. And frankly, reflecting on it, and I knew when I got to my destination that it was kind of dumb. The reason I didn't do it, again, I had bought a bunch of new equipment, a new RAM mount to hold the iPad up, a new knee board, there was never any point where I was in danger. You know, the basics and the flying and, that we all have to do. I was comfortable with the procedures as far as handling the airplane. But again, it went back to that resource management. And, by the time I landed, and tied down at the FBO and got my rental car and got to the hotel. I got to the hotel and I totally emptied my flight bag, in my hotel room. And I was really frustrated with myself that I let, management inside the cockpit get that far away from me. And like I said, it was over really simple things like not being able to find a sharp pencil. you know, it just really silly little things. And those are things when I was flying for the first, 70 hours with my old flight back, I knew where everything was.
Right.
So, you know, it's great to have new equipment. It's great to do that. But, doing it a couple hours before a first time for a long distance trip was a really just turned out to be a bad thing.
Right. Yeah. No, I hear you. It's like, there was a, I can kind of relate that to, you know, like for flight and using an iPad in the cockpit. You know, I've flown with so many people that go out and buy for flight or an iPad and load up their flight planning software on it and download all the charts. And that's all they do. And then the next time they open it, it's in an airplane. And then they just absolutely, like, can't stand the thing. They throw the iPad in the back seat of the airplane because they can't seem to figure out how to work the software. And then, they're like, oh, I'm just going to go back to paper charts. You know,
yeah.
it's like you're right. You know, there's a total management / you have to break everything in first before you actually like put it out there for operational purposes, you know?
Sure. And that was, you know, I made sure that I was updated, you know, beforehand, with my charts and whatnot as far as for flight goes. One of the best things that I had there, was the ability to look up frequencies rather quickly. I'd recorded some of those on the knee board, but, you know, while I didn't have flight following until I got out west a little bit, I was very diligent about, tuning into, you know, frequencies and whatnot while I was on the way. So I was listening to what was going on, but, you know, radio was something, you know, it's unavoidable here where we fly. So you get comfortable with the radio pretty early, but I just had so much going on, mentally, you know, pretty much challenging myself with the what ifs, like Mark mentioned, the whole way out. I just didn't want to add another layer, of having to worry about, you know, making frequency changes, you know, a whole bunch of times. So, you know, in hindsight, you know, that wasn't really a smart move on my part because, you know, the one thing I told myself when I got, to the hotel that night was, you know, it would have been much better to be on the radio and maybe be intimidated or sound a little ignorant, if for lack of a better term, but to have those guys know where you're at. Because, you know, Pennsylvania is a beautiful country. Ohio is great. But there's a lot of nothing out in certain parts of that. And, you know, we all know what could happen. And just not being in contact with somebody is just, you know, when those resources are available to all of us, that was a big lesson that I learned really quickly. You know, I did not have that problem coming back. I made sure that, cause I ran into another mental hurdle is when I got back to Akron to, depart, to come home that, a couple days later, it was very unclear. Do I need to contact, the Class C before I take off? Do I contact them after I take off? And, you know, quick search of the internet, thankfully that's out there. I actually found the answer to that question. You know, another tip that I want to share is as simple as it sounds, before I made that flight, YouTube is a very valuable resource because when I'm going to some place that I've never been before, I don't know, you know, of course we can all look at the paper charts and we can look at the airport diagrams and whatnot, but 9 times out of 10 I find if you jump on YouTube and just spend a minute and you type that identifier into YouTube, you're going to find somebody that's recorded themselves doing takeoffs and landings. So it helps you get a clearer mental picture of what to expect when you get there.
Yeah.
You know, of course I'm speaking from a new pilot's perspective. I know some of the high time guys are probably thinking, okay, big deal. But, you know, it's like I said, after you finish your primary training, before you start flying these long distance trips, you're kind of in limbo. It's like you got it. Now what do you do with it?
Well, and you talk about some of the high time guys might feel a little differently. I've flown with a lot of people, and as you heard even earlier today, we fly out of the third busiest airport in Illinois.
Yeah.
And yet I'm amazed how many people I fly with that say, well, instead of contact this facility, let's either get higher or go around it. I'm thinking, well, why don't we just want to stay right where we are, go straight through it and get the help on the way?
Sure.
And just, I think it's very natural, especially for primary students, but private pilots, to not want to talk that much on the radio, which just, I guess surprises me.
Yeah, and it's like I said, that's kind of the mindset that I had in the beginning, because I had loaded myself up with, gadgets and gizmos, in the plane when I should have gone back to my basic training when I didn't have any of that stuff. You know, if I was lucky, I had a sectional folded on a kneeboard if I needed it for that particular training flight. You know, and all would have been the better. You know, pulling up to the FBO when I got there was kind of neat because I pulled up, you know, and like I said, I parked and the plane and shut down. And here I am in this little 172 that's got a couple years on it. And I'm looking at all these business jets and whatnot. And the FBO pulls the rental car up right in front of the propeller after I'd shut down. Everything was safe there and popped the trunk for me. I felt like $1 million.
Yeah.
You know, it was like I felt like Donald Trump getting out of the plane. So that was just that was awesome. That was really, really awesome. But coming back after I left, you know, Akron, and I was headed back towards over to Pittsburgh, I immediately picked up flight following, and I'm glad I did. You know, when I took on fuel and whatnot before I departed. Of course, I did a walk around probably about 4 times, you know, and that's, you know, obviously a lot more than I would have normally done, but, you know, we were going to be in the plane for a while, and I left during the, probably about 7 o'clock, which, I knew it was going to be getting darker, the further east that I flew. And we had a couple fronts coming up from Indy behind us, which there wasn't any threat me running into, but it really did a number on the visibility. So I probably, again, I was VFR, so I came home. It was probably between 6 and 7 miles visibility, which, you know, it was much different than, you know, I've flown in that before, but it was much different than coming out. So I picked up flight following, and this is where those ridges and those altitudes that I'd paid attention to coming out came into play, because when I came out to Ohio, I was probably, you know, between the, around 4,000 feet. And when I went home, I was at, 5,500 to 6,500, depending on where they needed me. You know, coming over Pittsburgh and whatnot, there's a lot of big, wind turbines and whatnot that I didn't want any part of. And I'm glad I did it. Because, you know, visibility was, which was a lot less than what it was, heading out. And, the only thing that, got me with flight following, it really kept me on my toes, because I stopped counting at the 9th frequency change. From being switched off from different controllers. But one of the biggest thing, kicks I got out of that part was, like I said, I was a flight sim, you know, an armchair aviator for many years, and I still am. And, there's plenty of resources online where you can go on for simulated aircraft traffic controller. You know, being in a 172 and talking to Cleveland Center was pretty darn cool.
That's cool.
That
So Drew, tell me, you know, what was the prime catalyst for even starting your flight training?
Well, it's like a lot of guys, I've got the same story everybody does. I wanted to become a pilot ever since I can remember, and life got in the way. You know, I was I should also throw out there that the morning I left was the morning of my 23rd wedding anniversary, which I've got a really cool wife that didn't give me a hard time about going. Pretty much, honestly, the primary thing that put me over the edge and made me push the button was it suffered a lot of loss in my family, you know, and it was basically, I hate to sound cliche, but it was basically, you know, if you're going to do this, get off your butt and do it, because you don't know how much time you've got.
Right.
I actually started out as a sport pilot because of cost was a factor. And, I had some folks that were, you know, related to aviation, and frankly, they scared me out of the medical. You know, I heard a lot of horror stories about medicals and whatnot. So, the sport, pilot thing seemed to be like a quick way to go. So going into that, I actually put, my first 20 hours on a sport plane. The problem with, that I found with the sport pilot, as great as it is, I'm not knocking it whatsoever, but you're really geographically dependent on whether that's going to work for you or not, dependent on what your motivations are, because here where we're located right now, there are only 2 sport planes in the entire state. And with them being primary trainers at any given time, 1 or 2 of them may be down. Which is what kept happening to me. There was some issues with the hardware, and it took me out of flying for a couple months. So out of frustration, and I went and took the medical because it was basically a now or never. Just do it. If it works out, great. If it didn't, you know, for whatever reason, it wasn't meant to happen. And I did it, and started flying the 172, which is what I've pretty much got all my time in. And it's been great ever since. Absolutely love it. It's the most, I've raced cars. I've scuba dived. I've worked for salvage companies in New York Harbor. I've had the opportunity to try a lot of different things. And you know, even driving a race car to over 100 miles an hour, that's nothing compared to this. This is the most challenging, yet rewarding thing I've ever done, and I hope to do it for a long time to come.
Absolutely. Now you've taken on another challenge, just not flying, but helping introduce it to others, right? With the flying club.
Yeah, we're working on that. The FBO that I fly out of, I've been able to have some conversations with them, and my employer, of all folks, has recognized my passion for this, and has offered up some funding that'll actually go to help purchase an airplane to get that off the ground. So that's, it's a slow going process. It's going a lot slower than I thought it would. But there's a lot of hurdles to get over, to do that properly. And, I'm going to have a lot of questions for you guys as we get closer to that.
Yeah, we'll make sure to ask them because, the more flying clubs, the better. That's for sure. And I think that's pretty cool, you know, that just coming out of the gate like that and, you know, being able to share the enthusiasm for aviation, you know, with your employer, you use it for, you know, yourself and everything like that is really spectacular. And somebody, you know, yeah, I definitely applaud you for being able to transmit that kind of excitement to the point where somebody wants to buy an airplane to start a flying club and, you know, have you be the one that leads it and grow aviation. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really great. You know, that's one of the biggest things that probably took me a while to really start to consider it heavily is, you know, we turn on our TVs and all we hear, you know, we all know the news stories. There's no sense rehashing it and the things that happen and the misconceptions that are out there. And, you know, it's, you know, besides going to the local, the airport, you know, I used to take my sons a lot, and we'd just go out and watch. And, you know, some airports are very intimidating places. They're not very welcoming. You know, and that's a shame. That's really, really a shame.
Right.
And I know that I'm not the only one with that story. You know, there's plenty of folks out there that look up at the sky and they want to be a part of that. So, you know, whatever small part I can play, you know, to bring somebody, if I can get one guy to follow me, I'll be a happy camper. Just to introduce it to somebody else.
That's great. Awesome. Well, props to you for that. If you were to offer up some advice or some hints on how other people could help spread the good word of aviation or general aviation, what do you think, how can people help do that?
Well, I'm a member of the big groups, you know, proudly. I think that, you know, we've got some, you know, there's good advocacy for existing pilots, but they don't do enough to, as far as I'm concerned, to promote, to the general public. You know, within my day job, as in management, I have to deal with marketing and, you know, I'm definitely not a pro at it. We do it out of necessity, but, you know, when it comes to FBOs and flight schools and those things, as far as I'm concerned, there's a lot of work that needs to be done there, to get folks, you know, to recognize these opportunities are out there and they're available. You know, it's not a terribly cheap endeavor. But compared to some of the other things I've done in my life, with boats and race cars and whatnot, it's not the most expensive thing either. And I can promise them they're going to have a heck of a lot more fun doing this, than they are doing those things. I have no doubt about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. That's great. You know, this is something right up Mark's alley and, you know, when you and I had met, back in April, we had lunch and I was very impressed by the way that you said aviation had brought your family back together. I know Mark has always said that aviation is definitely a life tool and it connects, you know, and however you use it for your life, you know, connecting family is really, really cool. Do you want to touch upon that and how general aviation is solidified your family bond?
Sure. I'm very fortunate and blessed to be, I've got a great, wife of 23 years. We were high school sweethearts. And out of that, we've got two great sons. My oldest son, is getting ready to start at Rutgers in the fall. And he'll be working on his engineering degree, and his hope is to go into, flight transport for the Air Force. So that's kind of the track he's on. But, you know, my oldest son and I had that connection, with the flying, mostly again through simulators or the occasional ride by the airport to look through the fence. But once I got it, you know, any folks out there that are listening or you guys that, you know, maybe there's a teenager in your life, once they hit, you know, 10, 12 years old, they become a lot less interested in hanging out with mom and dad. I think that's just a fact. And the cell phones and the video games and all the things that they deal with from day to day aren't any help either. But it took a little while for the wife to get into the airplane. But my sons, they were actually my first passengers after I got my certificate. And now we go every chance we can get. Granted, the four of us are not too far under the weight limit for the 172, which that presented a couple of challenges learning how to compensate for those things, which has been really cool. We've got which is where we went over to Sky Manor. That was actually, there's a small family run airport restaurant there, which if you're ever over in the area, it's a great little place to go. But every chance we get, they have a buffet every Friday night. And, if the weather and all the stars align and things cooperate, it's almost become a family habit for us to go over there to have dinner. I'm lucky that I had a supportive family, while I was going through my primary training. They watched me come and go a lot of weekends and, watched me buried in the home office on a lot of weeknights to study. But now it's a fantastic thing. We've got a lot of plans for what we'd like to accomplish, with an airplane as far as visiting family, in the South, and whatnot. And, that was one of the other reasons I wanted to make the business trip. And one, the opportunity presented itself. B, I had the skill set. And C, I wanted to kind of get that hands-on by myself, in a solo environment, without having to worry about the things we worry about when we put loved ones in the plane. There is that extra layer of concern, anytime that I have my family with me. I really wanted to break that long distance ice by myself to make sure that I was going to be comfortable putting them into that scenario. It's great. There's my wife and kids have just been great, and it's absolutely, we have a blast when we're out there doing it together.
And which one of them will be the next to get their license?
If I would probably say my oldest son, although, in hindsight with, being the dad, I'm going to be, have that extra concern, should he ever experience an engine out. So I'm kind of forcing him down a different path to get started, and I'm going to probably encourage him, to get his glider rating first, and then move into his PPL. Frankly for my own peace of mind, but from everybody I talk to, there's a lot of valuable skill there and airmanship to be learned by going that route first. So that's probably what's going to happen. It'll probably be Jay, my oldest son, and if my youngest son wants to follow that course, we'll certainly help him get there. And she doesn't know it yet, but I'm going to have my wife take the minimize course. Trying to remember the name for it.
Pinch hitter.
The pinch hitter course, yes. Mm-hmm. I haven't quite talked her into taking the controls yet outside of straight and level, but she'll get there.
I don't know. If she's anything like my wife, the best I can do is please dial a frequency on the radio. You're not going to take the plane out of the sky.
Yep. She's good, but I have found out that she much rather prefers to be in the front seat than the back seat. She absolutely prefers it. But, I see so many guys out there, and I'm sure you guys see it too. Guys that are out there by themselves because their families just, for whatever reason aren't involved in it. And that's a shame. It's a shame. So, I consider myself to be very, very, very fortunate in that regard.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I will say this, and my wife gives me clearance to the airport every weekend. We do dinner and a movie on Saturday night, which is kind of how I earn that right. And we just accept she's not that happy in an airplane unless we're going to see family. So then I get to be with my friends like Al and others, which is just wonderful. That's my family too. Obviously not blood related, but passion related based on our common interests.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You guys, I mean, it's great to listen to the show and listen to the club and what you guys have out there. I'm really envious. I'm really envious.
Well, you'll build the same thing there.
I hope so. I hope so. That's the plan.
Leading Edge East.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. Then we have a place to visit.
That sounds like a plan.
Yeah. We'll get there in the sky or we'll start today. We'll see you in a week. Yeah.
Here.
Yeah, well, that's Chicago is probably not. How far would you say it is from, say, Akron? Probably another hour, a couple hours.
Oh, yeah. Probably about at least two.
Well,
three
let me
hours.
Put it this way: we had my very first Angel flight between Chicago Executive and Youngstown. Was round trip 8.8 in an Archer. No relation. Little joke there, Al. So 8.8 hours, but the 4.4 was basically because I went out IFR and Chicago, since I didn't want to go over to the lake, sent me out west. I had to go west to go east and then south to go east and it added at least an hour. So you're probably figuring on a VFR day 3 hours from Youngstown.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's not too bad.
No, depending on the airplane, but you know, at a 180 horse type engine, a Skyhawk would probably do the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that was the other thing that was kind of funny too is, you know, I tended to, try to take very good care, even though I'm currently a renter, in a very, very active, FBO, that they're actually train a lot of the college students, for that area. So those planes are always going. You know, and you try to be a good steward as a renter because there's nothing worse than, you know, going out to an airplane that you're paying for and finding a mess inside.
Right.
You know, that's just a pet peeve of mine and I can't understand why anybody would treat it anyway less. But, for the longest time I would make flights, you know, local flights with the family, say down to Cape May, which is the southern tip of New Jersey. There's a cool little museum there. With one of the only static F-14s that I know about on the East Coast to go see. But we would make those trips, and I would run the plane at 2,100 RPM, and I wouldn't go over that because that's what we did in training.
Wow.
You know, so I would get back in my logbook would be, you know, I'd look at my bill for that flight, and it's like, wow, it's only, you know, X amount of miles. Why did it take so long? And a couple days before I made this flight, you know, I actually did a refresher flight because I've actually got more night hours logged than I do day hours as far as since I got my certificate just because of my work schedule. I actually prefer to fly at night because it's just a lot less crowded around here. But, you know, the instructor I was flying with, he says, you know, is there something wrong? And I said, no, what do you mean? And he said, you know, you need to crank this thing up a little bit. You're never going to get to where you're going flying at that. So, you know, it's all little lessons like that. And that's one of the greatest things about what you guys do. There's not been a show that you guys have put out there that I haven't figured something out or learned something from the two of you.
Well, maybe we better start telling the truth.
that would be a good thing. That would be a good thing. But yeah, it's really an adventure, and I'm coming up on 100 hours. I'm sitting at 99.9 hours total
nice.
Right now.
You know what? As far as I'm concerned, you head over to the airport right now, start her up, and shut her down. Get that point one in there.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping for. I was hoping I was going to be able to do that in a new SP because another flight. If we've got the time, I'd tell you about my other flight. You know, that's totally up to you. I know you guys have got a show to do.
I think that's what we're doing.
Okay, well, that's well. But I got a call the end of last week from the owner of the flight school, and I felt really honored compared to a lot of the guys that are – there's plenty of pilots that are floating in and out of there with CFIs, whatnot, and younger guys trying to build time for their tickets to move on. But I was very honored to get a call to fly one of the two Cessnas down to Virginia Beach to deliver them that he had just sold so he could purchase new airplanes. That was a neat flight that we got to do. I taken it, met him at the airport, and we fueled the planes up, and we discussed a little bit about what we were doing, and I actually got to do, I want to call it formation time, but the reality was we were probably maintained at least a mile and a half to 2 miles apart the whole trip. But that was neat because it was the first time I got to venture south, which if, I intend to do a lot of flying with my family. We've got a lot of family down in Tennessee and whatnot. So that'll be my primary direction of flight, when that time comes. But we were going to be down, Virginia, which, you know, of course that presented, some concerns of mine because, you've got the Washington airspace to deal with. You know, if you get over that far, we flew the coast, so it really wasn't a factor. But that was another first, flying over water for any kind of extended period of time, over the Chesapeake and whatnot, which I'd spent a lot of time down that way as a kid in Annapolis and daydreaming about the Naval Academy, in the Chesapeake Bay Bridge and whatnot, and to see those things from the air, places you've been on the ground 100 times, to experience that from an airplane, frankly, it was breathtaking. It was really breathtaking. And we flew right over the Norfolk Naval Yards, on the way to where we were headed. I was looking down at the Nimitz or whatnot. One of the carriers was in port. And, don't think for a second I didn't have a daydream about putting a 172 on the back of that boat, which would have been really neat. But, we delivered the planes, down to this FBO, which the flight was uneventful, but it was, kind of cool tailing another Cessna for, it definitely couldn't be considered formation flying, but it was a really neat experience going down there and, getting, of course, to visit another new FBO and have lunch, and meet some new people, some new buyers that were there to buy the planes. That was a pretty cool experience. Then I got to fly back. We actually had a Mooney pilot follow us down there, another friend of the FBO. So I believe it was a M20, is it?
Yep. M20J maybe is the popular model.
It was, absolutely. It was the first time I've really been in a GA airplane outside of a Cessna. And, boy, that thing spoiled me. That thing really spoiled me flying back. And that there's not only the speed difference, because with the headwind that we had, we got excited when we topped out at 107 knots. coming home in that Mooney, we were probably, it was about a 3 hour ride down and about an hour and 40 minute ride back.
Isn't that cool?
It was cool. It was really, really cool. And again, it was great sitting, I actually elected to sit in the back seat.
Nice.
Because it was hot and I wanted to give the other guy a shot at the front. And, it was really a different perspective, to sit in the back seat, between two pilots and kind of watch, the pilot in command there. And somebody, he's also an Angel Flight pilot, has many, many hours. And it was really neat to watch him work, flawlessly. I really learned a couple things from him.
Yeah, I always learn even when sitting in the back seat. So that's great. You talk about the formation flight, and now I think we talked about this before. I was working as a lineman in Iowa City, and we had picked up at that time a brand new Piper Lance without radios, and it was sitting in Iowa City. We wanted to bring it to DuPage Airport, Delta Papa Alpha in Chicagoland area, and we said, let's go in formation, a flight of two, one with the radio and the other one just kind of in trail, and the one with the radio would kind of radio ahead and make sure that both of us were clear to land. And we had no communication between the two aircraft other than just following. So the guy in the lead airplane got clearance to land. Did they have a runway 33 at DuPage, right?
Yeah. A small runway.
So they got cleared to land on, I think it was 33, whatever. He landed on the wrong runway, which means both airplanes landed on the wrong runway.
Yeah. Oh.
He had no clue where the airport even was. And I, I was just a lineman. I don't even remember if I had my license at the point. I was just going along for the ride. And I just remember the tower saying, you just landed on the wrong runway. The guy that I remember him not really caring that much, but, he was out of his league and that was embarrassing. But it was neat to go in the formation, to your point. You know, two people, again, a flight of two. I thought that was a pretty cool experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Those are always fun to do that.
Yeah.
You know, the flight of twos. I was actually thinking about that. We should do out of Palwaukee here a flight of two or three.
And when now are you talking about even flying, taking off on the runway at the same time?
Yeah.
You're allowed to do that.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a waiver or anything?
Oh, you just call up as a flight of two or three. You know, you don't necessarily you have to and I want to verify with all the regulations.
Please.
I don't want to end up in jail under
yeah,
no.
I don't want,
as far as the specifics go, but if we were to get in the two airplanes right now and say, Cessna 172 flight of two, you know, we'd like to taxi for takeoff, you could go, you know, take off at the same time.
Okay. I think I told you I was in that 4th of July parade.
Yeah.
We did that last week, right? We talked about that.
Right.
Where I got to, it was a flight of three, but I figured because they were an aerobatic team, a performance team, that they had a special waiver.
No, anybody can do that. I remember in Champaign, I went to go pick up an abandoned, stranded airplane, in Peoria, and we flew an Archer over.
Papa India Alpha.
We landed, and I picked it up. And we flew as a flight of two back. You don't do any radios, and you know the guy does all the answering and everything for you. And then I came back to Champaign. And
Charlie, Mike, India. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Derailing it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then they had. So when we landed, the controller actually got mad at me. I was the trailing airplane,
right?
Saying that I had given perfect VFR spacing. And I broke up the formation, and therefore I needed my own clearance to land.
You were too far behind?
Yeah, but they knew who we were and, you know, what we were doing, so they didn't, like, raise any issue about it. But, you know, if you're, like, a mile behind each other, you're not a flight anymore.
That makes sense. So I wonder, gosh, that must be cool to do it for the first time. I mean, I've flown in quote-unquote formation just when we're heading up somewhere, kind of join up mid-flight, but the takeoff and the landing... I mean, you got to make sure you have your coordination and your speeds right between the two of you.
Yeah.
Let's not put the Archer in front of the 310 on the takeoff.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, but it's definitely doable. We should do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to do that. It's another bucket list item.
Yeah.
We could do it in gliders.
Two in tow.
Two in tow, yeah. Except I don't like that acronym. I might get in trouble for that.
Two in tow.
Kind of like sure happy it's Thursday, right?
Oh, man.
Yeah, okay. I digress.
My brain doesn't work in the acronyms.
Yeah, Drew got it. I could hear him laugh.
Yes. Back there.
Man, well, that's great. Well, Drew, this has been a great time having you on the show with us tonight. And, you know, we can't thank you enough for doing what you do and, with aviation. And the thing that sticks out the most is, you know, you bring your A game of enthusiasm to the table, you know, anytime you talk about it. And I think it clearly showed on the show tonight, as well as, every time that we talk off air, it's really awesome. So, you know, props to you for being a young aviator, if you will, and just hitting the ball running and get and spread the good word as fast as you possibly can.
Well, I appreciate that, Al. And you know, it's really been in a. It's like I said, I've got a strong background with car clubs and other things that I've done. But this one's really a challenge, not in a bad way. It's a positive challenge. You know, and I'm just enjoying it as much as I can. And, you know, I'm happy to bring the family along with me every time I go when they can be there. And, you know, there's a lot of folks out there that haven't experienced it, that need to experience it. And, I think all of us have, you know, responsibility as pilots, you know, to pay it forward, because there's a lot of guys out there that were just like me and probably like, that you guys at some point, you know, you get tired of looking up. You want to be there.
Right.
And we've got to show them how to get there. We've really got to work together to show them how to get there.
Amen to that.
Without a doubt. It's awesome.
Yep. Well, but I'll close with, you know, I know I speak for a lot of the other listeners out there, when I say that what you guys are doing is fantastic. It really shows that you're dedicated to the program. And frankly, I enjoy a lot of podcasts, but it's great to have a show that stays so focused on the GA community in particular. You know, the real world discussions are fantastic. So, you know, please keep doing what you're doing and know that we're out here listening. And, thanks very much for having me on the show to be a part of it.
Our pleasure. And thank you for the comments.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
That's all right, great. Drew. We will be in touch. Have a great one.
Very good. Take care, guys.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right.
Yay.
Yeah, can't you hear the enthusiasm in his voice?
Yeah, you almost could say you feel the enthusiasm.
Yeah, right? Honestly.
I think that's so much about what you and I get every day from GA and those that we deal with, that it is more than hearing it, you feel it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly.
Hey, I just got a tweet. Next LEFC flyout, love to do a formation flight. From our friend over in, where is Western Michigan? What city is that?
That is in Kalamazoo, Battle Creek.
All right. Battle Creek? That's where the cereal place is. Kellogg's or General Mills or whatever.
Yeah.
So, that's awesome. Yeah, so let's do that. Let's, again, we still haven't done the one thing that with FlightAware where you spell out something like Boeing. I want to do the LEFC one. And again, just plan for, if we never did it, it'd be fun to plan with all the waypoints and spell it out. And then I'd do it actually.
I think it would be awesome. We need to, we do need to write it down and figure out a good lesson or thing to plot and make it happen.
L-E-F. We could do it. The C's gonna be tough.
Yeah.
At least the L, E, and F, you have block letters, right, you know, 90-degree turns.
Right.
So.
You need a lot of waypoints in your GPS with a digital autopilot.
I think I have an app.
Yeah.
And we could create that app.
Yeah.
How
to skyrocket.
I didn't say that. It's my idea. Everyone here, it's my idea. I'm going forward with it. I like that app.
All right.
Yeehaw.
Something's there. The wheels are turning.
Yeah. So, what's my favorite LSA that doesn't fly yet that I keep talking about that I want?
The Icon A5.
Beep, 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 beep. Yay.
Yes.
So, it is, absolutely. And, I just read about a competitor out there.
Are you serious? There's a competitor for it?
That's what I hear. And so, I'm looking up here. Let me, without making too much noise, lift this up. And it is, wrong one. Son of a gun.
Son of a gun.
Oh, it is the Sea Dragon Gen 2.
Right.
Right. All of a sudden you're saying, oh, something like that exists? But yeah, that's right. Yeah, you make me feel like an idiot.
Mm-hmm. I was just being like, oh, it exists. No,
you're
down
at
the
man.
Bottom of my heart.
So, original Sea Dragon proof of concept vehicle was the first all-composite amphibious aircraft in the light sport category. Years have gone into the design and development of the Sea Dragon to deliver the most innovative aircraft in its class. So, it looks strangely like the Icon, although it is a tail dragger, which is kind of neat.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's very cool. And, but it's an amphibian, Rotax 912 SI, max power, 120 knots. It's interesting they call it max power, not max speed. 1238 initial foot per minute rate of climb. 1238 foot per minute, but it's the initial rate of climb. I guess once you get there, then you stall and crash and burn. I really want to find out more. I want to see what it looks like on the inside. They only have the outside. Refundable deposits. I wonder when it's gonna... Letters of intent for the first 200 aircraft have, already been taken and currently have dealership opportunities still available.
Let's get a dealership
going.
Yeah,
let's do that.
We should.
Let's see if a flying club could be a dealership for them.
So let it be written. So let it be done.
That'd be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
It's a whole new take. You know me. And after talking to Drew, I'm all excited about life short. Got to do it.
Yeah.
Can't wait for tomorrow.
Right.
Do it today.
I let me tell you this. I'm getting seaplane happy. I need a seaplane fix. That would be like a perfect way of get your tail dragger and seaplane rating. Come on. That'd be gnarly.
It'd be awesome. And I'm sitting here thinking, as I always do, in the Midwest, we have Lake Michigan. We got Minnesota, a land of 10,000 lakes. You got Lake County, Illinois. You got Wisconsin with lakes out the yin yang. And I don't want to tell you what a yin yang is, but there are a lot of lakes. And people have houses along Lake Michigan in both the Wisconsin and Michigan side. How can an amphib just not be successful?
Right. I don't know. I think there's a total market for it here in the Midwest, and you know, especially even in the metropolitan area of Chicago.
That I'm not so sure of, but I would think at least the people that we know, for instance, that have summer homes and we'll call them lake homes because it's not just summer.
I would think that there is. You have the chain of lakes. I mean, a lot of these lakes are busy, but you know, Lake Geneva, you got, I guess, Lake Michigan. And
oh, yeah,
and
then there's that.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. big old thing. Uh-huh. But, you know, what would be weird is landing in the middle of that, one, on choppy water, and then two, just let's say you're in one of those, in Icon A5, and you just land in the middle of the lake, and you just, you know, you stop and you have lunch or something like that.
Yeah, go fishing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you catch a fish pole. And then you start eating it. Well, you don't even need a pole in Lake Michigan. You just pick them off the top of the lake on the sides. Yeah. No, that's
gross.
The old joke. That's not even true.
Or you get like a family of Asian carp that just start jumping and slapping your boat.
Yeah, or smelt. Yeah. So, I would like to get my seaplane rating. I would like to bring the amphib market, if you will, to Chicago, because other than a few lake amphibians that I see flying around, one or two.
Yeah.
I think that's it. I don't know that I've seen anyone else with anything else around here.
No. No, absolutely not. There's a couple, if you really start looking at the sectional here in the Chicago area, especially in Wisconsin, I'm amazed at how many seaplane bases there are.
Oh, is there?
Private and just, you know,
there's one over, isn't there a guy that teaches on the Mississippi River?
I think he's gone.
Oh.
But yeah, so then you have that thing, the Mississippi. That you know, thing. Or you could do river landings and,
what are
lake
the rules
landings.
On that?
So that's probably the most tricky part about seaplane, flying. You know, a lot of people are, you know, a little nervous about flying or landing or whatnot, but
yeah.
That would be the biggest thing that I would be concerned about is doing the appropriate research on finding which lakes you can and cannot go in and out of. And
rivers. I mean, the Mississippi is the mighty Mississippi, but there's barges, there's lots of traffic on there.
Yeah. No. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Absolutely. So that's the big thing of, you know, and a lot of, here's the big misconception about seaplanes is that, you know, I think that, from my understanding from my training is that, you know, there's this big legal battle, you know, and you may be able to, you may go in and land at an at a lake. This kind of goes along the same lines of these aircraft searches, you know, and you're perfectly legal, but local law enforcement thinks that you're just messing around, you're up to no good and mm-hmm. disturbing the peace, and they come and arrest you, you know, because it's not, you know, it's not common to see a seaplane
right.
landing in, you know, Lake Geneva, or you know, wherever, whatever lake you're.
Well, again, and Lake Geneva, which is very popular, I just envision lots of people swimming. You're hitting somebody on the head with your pontoon. I'd just be afraid of that. But I won't say perfect opportunity, but here's one that I'm just kind of fantasizing about now. A seaport in Chicago at Lake Michigan. And then you taxi up to, in your plane, up to one of the restaurants on like Navy Pier or something like that.
Yeah. It'd be awesome.
Because right now you see all the boats come up for lunch.
Right.
What if you came up on an airplane for once?
That'd be cool.
Oh, that'd be.
If you could have any seaplane in the world, what would it be?
See, I'm not that knowledgeable about it. I mean, I know a lot of people think of like the Twin Otter and stuff, but
yeah,
I love the look of the. Of the Icon and potentially here the Sea Dragon. I'd be a little disappointed in the LSA type speeds and load carrying. But for me, that's all I think I need. I don't have any destination that's on a lake that's far away. To me, it would be just a fun airplane.
Yeah.
How about you?
I think it would be awesome to have a caravan on floats.
Okay. Yeah, that does sound great. Because then you go in style, you can go places, you can carry a load, you can get around, and that would be pretty cool.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
That would. Think about that. There's a great airport restaurant in Indianapolis, Rick's Boatyard Cafe.
Yep, been there many times. Eagle Creek.
So
Echo,
delicious.
Uniform Echo.
So delicious. And I always like fantasize eating out on the patio at Rick's Boatyard and just rolling up in this, you know, grand caravan on floats with like an Oasis interior and, you know, Garmin G1000 panel and all. Oh my God. That'd be awesome. You just hop out with your friends and go to lunch. You just hop right back in and just take off. Go full power, barely moving through the water, get on the step, and then you just kind of lift off.
Hey, we were talking earlier at dinner about getting helicopter ratings. What about a helicopter on pontoons?
Did you see the one in the Hudson?
No, but when I was growing up, there was some TV show. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was Chips, you know, California. Oh, that was about motorcycles. But some police show had like a Bell helicopter on the pontoons, and they would land in the water. I thought that was pretty cool.
They do have some. I think there's some amphibious helicopters that the Navy uses, like a Sea King or something like that.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, flying helicopter boats. So they don't, you know, I don't think they have, pontoons or whatnot, but there's the guy that just, was on one of those sightseeing tours in Manhattan that had an engine failure. Did you read about that? It was pretty faint, recent.
How did I miss that? No.
Maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
I did not.
A guy went down in the Hudson.
You know what? I didn't hear any of the details, but I heard there was another landing in the Hudson. Yes.
Yeah, it was a helicopter sightseeing tour company, and the airplane or the helicopter had pontoons, inflatable pontoons, like the Cirrus has a parachute.
Yeah,
this thing had pontoons to
land cool.
On.
You mean you just pull the ripcord, the thing?
Yeah. So
and you do it before you touch down. I hope.
Yeah, you do it.
You're on the bottom of the Hudson and whoop.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So he inflated the pontoons and landed right on the pontoon, you know, these inflatable pontoons.
What a great safety device.
Yeah, yeah. No kidding. I was like, wow.
So he auto-rotated down?
Yeah.
So neat. Okay, hey, we got a tweet here from Blaine's Planes. There was an article in the last Seaplane Pilots Association magazine about the need for seaplanes in Chicago.
Awesome.
All right, we can fill that need.
Yes. Let's get going on a dealership opportunity for that. Well, that'd be cool.
And Midwest Flight Line says there are actually a couple places in Chicago where you can theoretically, I'm using the word, land a seaplane. We need to do some more research. I think it'd just be cool to understand that.
Oh, yeah.
I think I want to take my written for seaplane just so I know all these rules and regs.
You don't need a written.
Oh, but helicopters you do, right? Because they have a separate, because I just want to understand, so I just need to go out and study the seaplane FARs.
Right. It's all based on the category, the category and class. And even though you have a category, which is airplane, and then class is single engine C and all that. So, you know, you'll have I don't think you need to take a written for that. I didn't have to take one.
You were supposed to, and you just failed to do it.
Shoot. Got a license out of it. It's awesome.
All right, so we got now someone scheduled seaplane flights from Chicago to northern Michigan. All right, who wants to start an airline?
Yeah.
You and I have talked about starting an airline.
Yeah.
I think we ought to do it. I think there's needs, and I think the seaplane is a kind of a neat difference maker.
Right.
Probably not in the winter, because then it could be an ice plane. But during the summer,
skis.
You know, for again, these people that have lake homes that maybe fly Gulfstream on their job Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
The ability to head from Chicago and taxi right up to their lake home's dock, to me, is a winner.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
What does our studio audience think? I think they think it's a good
idea. They're pretty cranked about it.
They are.
Golf clap. Yes. That is out. The soundboard. I love it.
Yeah, I got the soundboard going because I should have used this before.
Hey, here's a question for you.
I have an answer.
I hope you do.
Yeah.
Do you know where to get, like, little radio show, like, background music? You know how, like, if you listen to a talk show in the morning, and they have, like, people that call in, and in the background, they've got, like, little elevator music going on? You know, like, funny things?
Well, I'm sure you can get anything at the Apple Store or iTunes, I mean.
Yeah, I'll have to check there.
Because, you know, the first time I ever had something like that happen, people from the Midwest, if you've ever been to Milwaukee, when I grew up, and again, this is a few years ago, there's a restaurant called the Safe House.
Yes.
I think it's still there.
It is.
And you go down the alley, you knock on the door, and they open the little window, and you say, I'm looking for a safe house, and a secret door opens up into this restaurant. It's kind of a roaring 20s type thing.
Yeah.
But they had a payphone. Yes, we used to have payphones. And you could call anyone, you know, you'd put in your 10 cents and you could call anyone by down the phone and then you chose the background of what was going on. So you could have machine guns in the background in a fight.
Oh, God.
Or you say, okay, I want this while I'm at the airport or I want the machine gun fight behind me.
Oh my God.
You're having the conversation.
I'm looking for a safe house.
Yeah. That was cool because did you ever eat there?
Yeah.
Do they still do the thing where you order your sandwich and it comes on a trolley system with a briefcase overhead and then it lowers down to your table?
I don't think we sat under that table. You know what was awesome? My grandpa actually suggested that we eat there.
Oh, that is awesome.
Yeah.
I like your grandpa.
Yeah.
I haven't met your grandpa.
No, you have not.
What's his name?
Quinn.
Quinn Waterloo?
Yeah.
Quinn Waterloo. So this is obviously Dan's father.
Yes.
Dan and Quinn. I like this.
Yeah.
I'm starting to learn. You know, you don't learn about your friends until you work with them.
Hey, what's your middle name?
You know the answer to this.
I do?
Yeah, don't you?
No.
You know my middle initial.
M-E-E.
No, you don't know?
M-C?
I thought we'd been through this.
No.
So, okay, and my mom's probably listening. So, Mom, I'm going to be picking on you. I always thought back in the 50s when I was born, that they gave my mom some pretty weird drugs. She named me Mark with a C, which I love. I absolutely think Mark with a C is a really cool way to spell it.
Yeah.
So that's okay. And then for my middle name, she gave me the letter L.
L.
Literally. There is no name. It's just the letter L.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. I have no clue. And every time I ask her, to this day, why did you give me an L? Well, that way you could pick whatever name you want. But it has to begin with an L. What kind of choice is that? Besides Lawrence and Larry, there's like...
It could be Lester.
Lester. Thanks a lot. Well, actually, what's worse, when you go and fill out a government form and they want your full name...
Yeah.
And it says no middle initial... And I put an L down, that kind of causes a problem.
Wow. Right?
So do you know what I write? What I used to write, I don't do it anymore.
What do you write?
I write L only. But it comes back lonely.
Oh.
So I don't, and then I did L-I-O, which was L, initial only. I don't know, how do you tell people when they say, I need your full name? Well, it's L. No, what's your, it's L only. Oh, it's lonely. No. So it's a pain in the butt. So my full name is Mark with a C, L, Eppner.
Mark L period Eppner.
Exactly.
Wow.
Of course, then my initials, if you say my initials fast, it sounds like a girl's name.
Emily?
Emily. Oh, you're Emily. No, I'm not Emily. I'm Mark.
Oh, my God.
I could go all night with my name.
Only you would have a middle initial. middle name probably.
Yeah, right, exactly. My dad didn't have a middle name. Of course, his real first name was Isidore, but he never told anyone other than his army buddies who were in the World War II. So when he came back, he changed to Robert.
Really?
And didn't change it legal. He just started going by Robert.
Wow.
So people would call him us up in the house. Is he there? I'd tell him they had the wrong number.
Wow.
That's interesting. I had no clue until someone told me, no, his real name is Izzy. Isidore.
That's amazing.
And I like Robert. I mean, he was Bob.
Yeah. Yeah, here's an airplane that kind of has the same problem as you, but
it only has initials.
I think it's better. It's the Howard DBA.
Doing business as?
Or no, DGA. Howard DGA. Delta Golf Alpha.
And I'm not familiar.
Have you ever seen a Howard DGA?
If I have, I don't know that I have.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah, take a look at it. Okay, and it's I'm not going to reveal what it stands for until you take a look at it. Okay. It's actually an amazing. It's brilliant. There was one gentleman that
is this a DGA 6, a DGA 12, or a DGA 15? I'm just going to go DGA airplane.
Okay.
Howard Aviation. Oh,
yeah.
Of course, the first thing comes up tells me what DGA stands
yes.
for.
Yes.
It's a beautiful airplane.
Isn't it?
It's a radial engine tail dragger.
It's huge. These things are monstrous. They're like like a Cadillac hearse of an airplane.
And here's one on pontoons.
Is there one on pontoons? Oh, holy smokes. That's amazing. So Howard DGA stands for?
Damn good airplane.
You got it.
You want to hear one start up?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to hear a Howard DGA start up. Get the oil in the engine.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Very throaty.
Can you replay that? That's awesome.
Well, I love the way they start. Very slow to get the oil in the cylinders before they... Because now it's running smooth.
Yeah. Wow, that is cool. That's all iconic big bore engines should sound like on startup. And that's
cool. Kind of stubby looking. I thought it'd be longer.
Yeah,
but it's got wheel fairings on it. It's a high wing tail dragger with a big old radial engine.
Yeah. The Lockheed Vega.
Here's an Howard DGA 15P landing runway 10 in Osceola, Wisconsin.
Wow.
So we should go up there.
Yeah, and a Howard DGA. That would be pretty amazing.
I wish you hadn't said Lester.
Oh, why?
My wife just tweeted, she likes Lester. We're not changing my name.
Wow. That's awesome. There's a...
You want to hear it again?
Yes, I do.
All right.
I just
clear
think
prop.
It's awesome. Clear off the propeller.
Sounds like it's not catching. It's a beautiful airplane.
Oh, man.
It's like cabin class.
That sounds awesome. Look at that thing go.
There it sounds smooth as glass. It's taxiing out to the runway.
Yeah.
Let me go out here.
That's awesome. This would be perfect to have I always appreciate a good flight simulator airplane with like the appropriate sound bites that go along with it. In college, I remember downloading for FSX, 727s with, the legitimate, sound package and stuff
awesome.
Like that. It was oh my goodness, a 767. Those were my two favorite, ones.
I like this too, the N number is an NC number.
Cool.
I just want to get the takeoff. Let me move. So, okay, here we go. That's too far away. He's in his takeoff roll. Obviously, outside, you hear the wind.
That wasn't as loud as I thought it would have been.
Well, it's the guy's far away.
Oh.
And he's up in the air. It's a beautiful airplane.
Yeah.
Oh, here's what I'm not going to do anymore, but there's a barrel roll here. I want to see it from the inside. Jeez. We'll do the. Oh, it's got the trim on the wing up above.
Oh, man.
All right, we'll do this later.
You know what's another cool thing is, you know, like the old Grumman and de Havilland products?
Right.
With
right.
the throttle up top?
Yes. Well, that's what, you know, I used to like, when you asked me about amphibs, I liked the Lake Amphibian growing up. This is long before there was such a thing as an icon or even a concept. But I always thought that was neat. They had the throttle hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah.
And then you open up the glare or the window in front of the glare shield and sit out on the nose of the aircraft.
Yeah. That's unbelievable. That just makes me want to pack a lunch and just go in the middle of Lake Michigan.
Perfect. Perfect.
And just go out there and fly back and go back to work. Where'd you go to lunch? The middle of Lake Michigan.
Yeah. Well, people, even now, when I say, where'd you go to lunch? I went to Rick's Boatyard in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
I went to St. Louis.
Yeah.
You know, my non-pilot friends, like, they still don't, they don't get it.
Yeah. I went to Mackinac Island for lunch yesterday.
Oh, I know. I'm jealous of that. That's, we're going to have to do that. Here's a question for you that should be answerable by every aviation person in the world. I was asked it just last night by a non-aviator.
Yeah.
Because I mentioned, in front of my wife, I said that, you know, I could have flown over the house, even though it's kind of close to the localizer coming in on 1/6 in the Sky Arrow. And, Marcy said, you know, don't, you know, that wouldn't be smart. I said, no, it'd be high enough and you could wave to me. And the person we're with said, there's no way you can see someone wave on the ground. Which is nuts.
Yeah.
How high would you say that you could comfortably see someone in a backyard? You know, obviously not a Where's Waldo.
Yeah.
Among 500,000 people. Wait, what altitude do you think someone could get in the backyard and wave to you and you'd see it?
Oh, I think easily 2,000 or 3,000 feet.
Bingo. That's what I told her. She was, there's no way. I said, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a green field, and you see a little dot, or even a dot of person, their arms move, you can see that at 3,000 feet. So, and I said, I'd be over, you know, 1,600, which you definitely could see.
Oh, that's no problem at all.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, so I know I'm not nuts now.
Yeah, no, I think you got the top of the hat on that one.
Yeah, she doesn't like airplanes, so I'm sure she's not listening to the show.
Yeah.
This person.
Aw.
Aw. Poor baby.
Poor airplanes.
You know, this chair, I've got a WD-5. I apologize. The people can hear the squeak in the background.
That did not come out of a damn good airplane.
No, that's right. No DGA here.
No, not so.
Now, your Boeing 717 seats that we have in here.
Those.
That's a DGA.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I like those.
Hey, did you hear about the Youngstown Flying Club is starting to get going or trying to? What are they called? The Young YNG Warriors, Yankee November Golf. They're trying to form a club that's free or low cost training to veterans. The whole focus is on veterans.
That's pretty cool.
That's very cool. I like the new concept of mission that's not been done before.
Yeah.
Right? And so I might hats off to them and I apologize. I normally would have all the names. Oh, you know what? I probably do have the names in front of me. I just have to open this up. But Youngstown, Ohio, free or low-cost flight training veterans. They've got an ATC 610, that little tabletop simulator. This guy gets used to do ground school. Ground schools actually will be free for veterans, but he sees it as a pay-it-forward type thing. To me, at this point, for veterans, it's pay-it-back.
Right.
But I think that's just such a great idea, and so my hat's off to them. And
that's really cool. I like that concept.
Yeah, so here it is. The idea for the club came from U.S. Marine Captain Gabriel Glinsky, a V-22 Osprey pilot and former civilian flight instructor. Glinsky won AOPA's Let's Go Flying Award in 2010 for his efforts to organize and teach a ground school for his fellow unit members while on active duty in Afghanistan. In November, he created the first Warriors to Wings Flying Club in Henderson Field Airport in Wallace, North Carolina, near Marine Corps Air Station New River for current and former members of the military. So this gentleman, Williams, golly, his name's cut off from here. Anyone can join the club. We're looking for a mix of people, including active pilots, to serve as mentors, CFIs, mechanics, and aircraft owners. but the primary function is to train veterans in a pay-it-forward fashion. So, again,
nice.
Kudos to Mr. Williams, and I apologize. I'm looking off of a picture that doesn't have the whole article, so I don't have his first name, but you can find it. So
that's awesome.
That is awesome. Congratulations.
Do you think I wonder how many veterans will sign up?
I don't know. You know, it's similar to what we wanted to do before, what I talked about with our Able Flight director, Charles Stites.
Yes.
That I wanted to do something for disabled folks here in the Chicagoland area.
Right.
And the response I got from Charles was there might be a market, but a lot of it is served by like a Purdue University with their connections to Able Flight. And so it's a very much an unknown as to whether there's a lot of people that are interested and two, willing to take advantage of, you know, if there's a fee for it, you know, if they're in a position to say, yeah, I want to know how to fly.
Right. There was I was actually in Lafayette last Monday.
Oh, great airport.
Yeah, it's a pretty neat airport. Dead at this time of year, now that the school's out. And I think they got a few summer classes, but it was really hot. But I saw two Sky Arrows flying around.
Well, and that's where you'd find them, right?
Yeah. Because
and we're going back to a much earlier show where Able Flight, which is a charitable organization that provides free flight training to those people that want a light sport ticket and are dealing with disabilities.
Right.
And the Sky Arrow is a perfect platform for that because if you buy it from the factory out of Rome, you can get it with the adaptive controls so that you don't need to have any rudder pedals. Everything's controlled by hand.
Yeah.
So although they've had, I think, like quadriplegics, which I don't understand, but certainly paraplegics are able to get their light sport license. So that's exciting to actually see it.
That is. It really is. I've only seen two Sky Arrows in two places. One at Purdue, and then two at Sky Manor, where Drew, our guest on tonight's show, and flew. And yeah, there's one sitting there. I'm like,
600 or 650?
650.
Okay, but 600 is the LSA.
Right.
That's why you have those at Purdue. That's cool.
Yeah, it was really cool.
I've never seen one before. We got one here at this airport and have not seen it since other than videos.
I want to fly to O'Hare. Still want to do that.
We can make that happen. It'll be pretty late one night. But it'll be pretty neat. We should fly it even to Midway. That would be a good interim one.
That'd be a hoot.
Hoot. So here's a piece of news that with Oshkosh just a little over a week away, I can't believe I still haven't bought my ticket. I think I'm going to go twice.
Really?
I'm going to go Tuesday and be part of AOPA's Flying Club panel. They've asked me to be on the panel, which I'm excited about.
Congrats.
And then I'll do breakfast on that Tuesday morning. And then as a club, I'd like to see us do a fly out there on that Saturday.
That'd be pretty gnarly, wouldn't it?
Yeah. But as you know, the FAA basically told the EAA, you need to pay for any ATC. And instead of blowing away Oshkosh, they agreed to do it to the tune of some $500,000. Did you see where EAA is suing the FAA?
Wow.
Because they didn't give them proper notice, I think was the claim.
Really?
Yeah. So I just hate all this. It doesn't have to be this way.
Yeah. You know what? As much as everybody's saying, oh, they shouldn't have to pay for it and all that, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I don't think it's a bad thing that they have to pay for it. And, you know, what's wrong with just using the existing tower? You know, maybe they just closed it. I don't know. Do you need organization? I assume that you do, but, you know, I don't think that's a bad thing that they'd have to pay. You know, it could ultimately, if this does lend to the privatization of air traffic control or more going in that direction, and I hate to use the word user fee. I don't think...
Oh, my God!
No, it's a... if they do end up having to pay, I would actually be supportive of it. What about you?
What's that, user fee or the privatization?
The privatization or paying, having the EAA pay for air traffic control.
Well, I guess I see the world in which we live now, the country in which we live now, that the FAA provides us air traffic services. And so if with that, any reversal of fortune, as he leans over, hold on a second.
All right. Thank you.
Well, Al's getting hot, so I had to turn on the fan. I had to pull myself away from the mic.
Man.
You know, it's free now. I feel uncomfortable all of a sudden not making it free, and that I think does translate to user fees. And we've learned, whether it's propaganda or not, I believe it, that in countries other than U.S. that have tried to figure this thing out, GA dies. And I don't want to see GA die in the U.S. So I say it works, it's expensive, but it's the best model we got. Let's stick with what we have.
Yeah. There's something to be said about that, too. You know, if it somehow trickles down to the guys like you and I certainly would say, no, let's not. You know, this is a company that decides to, you know, run an event. And, you know, if there was a fly-in with 12,000 airplanes and at another non-controlled airport, if they all just decided to show up at another airport one day, 12,000 of them, you know, is air traffic control going to show up?
Well, to your point earlier, if I go to Oshkosh, I'm not comfortable with the guys that, you know, the two guys that are up there with 12,000 aircraft.
Yeah.
By the way, thank you to Midwest Flight Lines. EAA update claim is that the FAA acted without congressional authority in charging the fee. So a little clarification on why the lawsuit is forthcoming. Thank you.
See, Midwest, that's good. I don't mind if they're stepping out of the bounds of the law and all that, just say, hey, okay, just pay for it, or not going through the proper channels, then, yeah, you can't just do that. Just kind of like how the towers were going to be shut down, just like, okay, we don't have the money, that's it. You know, we're pulling the plug. It's like, well, you can do that, but it's just going to be like, you know, there's not enough notice.
Right. Well, I don't want to say that we're breaking the story here, but
wow. We
might be breaking the story on Simple Flight Radio. And this is only on a hypothesis. All right.
Wow.
So I'm not saying this is fact. I'm saying I'm fearful that the third largest air show in the U.S., I think it's the third largest air show in the U.S., it's at least a free air show.
Yeah.
May not happen this year. Where is that?
Chicago Air and Water Show?
That's my fear. That's my guess.
Really?
Yeah. And all I can say is they're not treating this like any other year in terms of putting an agenda out there. I was talking to someone that flies in it normally, and they've been told they don't want them this year. It's not in those exact words.
Wow.
So, and I haven't been out to the website, but I was just given this information within like the last, I don't know, X number of hours, a day or so that normally they have you go on, and of course they're not going to have Thunderbirds or Blue Angels.
Right.
So maybe that's all it is. It's just going to be a much more subdued effort. But, I mean, that's huge for Chicago, and it's huge for aviation, and it's free, and it's all over Lake Michigan, and for that, all of a sudden, not to be here, and we're only a few weeks away from when it would be on. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So they gotta start doing something fast.
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do. Man. Well, I don't want to end on a bad or a sad note.
Okay. So there is a show going to happen.
Yes, and that's Simple Flight Aviation Radio next week.
Oh, there you go. Hey, now next week, I'm OOT.
Out of town.
Why?
Oshkosh.
No, why? The letter Y, that's short for yes.
Oh.
Actually, no, next week I am going to be at family. My intent is to dial in and be part of the show, but
sweet.
You'll have to come up with all our wonderful, wonderful sound effects.
The wonderfulness. That's what it's going to sound like if I'm in charge of it. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm sure the show will fly. It'll soar.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Well, I hope you have a great. Are you going to Iowa?
I am. Get to, guys, unless you become, actually anyone that knows what it's like to be a parent knows what it's like to become a grandparent. It's the exact same feeling. There's no difference. I was surprised. And I get to babysit with my wife for just a couple days. She started crawling like yesterday.
Wow.
Yesterday she started crawling. So I'm just excited. And the great news is that probably at this point we'll fly out there to see her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I just got to decide which airplane.
I love it.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing.
Perfect.
I can't believe this has been 2 hours.
I know.
The interesting start we got with the commotion in the room here with people coming in and out.
Yeah.
And all that. I thought that was a sign of a troubled show, but this has been a lot of fun. We got a lot of tweeters tweeting in. I didn't get to 90% of them. But thank you to all of our listeners out there for being an active participant in the show, and thank you to Drew Archer for sharing his energy and passion for general aviation.
Yeah, no, that was absolutely great. It's nice to hear good stories like that, and of the up and coming aviators of today. It's awesome.
Yeah, of all ages. And we wish him luck in starting his flying club. Everything's going to be great there.
Yeah, right.
And let's see. I'm looking over my notes. We kind of got through most everything.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? It's been a long day. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, you've been flying all day. I've been sitting here just thinking about flying.
Yeah, I've been at this airport since 6 a.m.
You are the luckiest man alive.
I got to say, we're here to open the tower and we're here to close it.
That's right, CTT.
Great.
Close the tower.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now we got a CTS.
Yeah.
Close the show.
Yeah, close the show. Well, I hope you have a great week in flying and as well as your trip to Oshkosh.
That'll be after next week's show.
That's after next week.
Yeah, see family, and we both should have a good week at work.
Right.
And get a lot of energy but I'm very excited about all my aviation-related things that I get to do this week.
Yeah, you should be.
Baby.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. All right, sir. Well, you have a great week as well. I hope you're flying, I'm assuming.
I am. I've got – I am not flying the King Air this week, but I am all booked up with lessons.
All right. Well, I hope all of your lessons have very strong tailwinds.
Thank you, and I hope they have – very blue skies, unless on the days that we're doing instrument training. Overcast of 200.
Sounds wonderful. All right, let's make it a great week. And to all of you out there, a wonderful week of blue skies and tailwinds for you as well. We'll see you next week.
All right. See ya.
Good night.
Good night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.